Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. This is our Friends of the Pod annual extravaganza where we talk to all of our buddies who have allegiances to different AFC East teams. And tonight we're finishing the cycle with Jared and his J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
Yay.
Jared, why don't you kick us off? And for anybody who's new to the podcast, in this space and across all kind of listening platforms, how did your Jets fandom begin? Where did you, where did you jump on the Jets bandwagon and walk us through it?
Yeah, so my parents are originally from the suburbs of Washington, D.C. So when we moved as a family of Jewish people to Long Island, New York, the only rule that was really in place were you can't be Giants fans.
Okay.
So I thought the Jets were cool. And then when I was a kid, the Jets seemed to like, and it's funny because this is still their MO, 35 years later, they were never good, but they always had really cool players with incredible upside that were fun to follow. So like, the New York Sack Exchange begets the Bill Parcells era and, the career resurgence of Vinny Testaverde Wayne Krabet and Keyshawn Johnson and Curtis Martin and how much fun that was to follow. And then, the sticking point for the Jets was always great running game, great scheming, great defense, which, as my love of sports kind of evolved in any sport that I was into, it was similar to the Jets' philosophy, even if it wasn't football. So that was where it started. And then, then something went terribly wrong in the 2000s. We haven't really gotten back yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
As a child at the peak of Vinny Testaverde's power, I always just thought of him as like the ex-athlete uncle. Like that's just what he looked like, right? Like he was always like your Italian uncle who used to play college ball. Like that's what he just lives that.
Absolutely.
It's so funny you just said that because what Vinny Testaverde taught me, and I do not mean this as a backhanded compliment, I mean this sincerely, and we're learning this to Harbaugh right now with Aaron Rodgers. You do not need an all-universe quarterback to be a very successful professional football franchise. You can run the ball well. You can make good decisions. You can be a game manager. You can have good defense. And I'm very into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially in that era of Jets football, too. I mean, not just Testaverde, but you guys had come through there like Chad Pennington, too, right? I mean, Perfect example of that kind of stuff. So, oh, God, your love of the Jets and your knowledge of the Jets runs so deep, Jared. And for those of you who have never listened to a Jared featuring podcast, we're about to get what can only be described as like the greatest therapy couch session of all time. That is about to happen. Yeah. Buckle up, everybody, because it's about to get real. All right. So, Jared, let's just hop right in, man, because I know you're already warmed up. I know you're raring to go on this. Let's start before we hop into the now. And the now that we're in is we're about 4 days or so into the free agency period. The league year officially started yesterday. The Jets have already made some moves for 2025. But before we go there, let's look back a little bit on 2024. And I got to give you props because in all of our offseason pods last year, you kind of called this perfectly.
Called every moment of this, did I not?
This team flows through your veins and you just knew on a cosmic level what was going to happen last season. And you nailed it. The Saleh firing, the Douglas turmoil and firing, Aaron Rodgers absolutely tanking. We brought you in midseason at one point just to kind of talk about what we were seeing from the Jets. But I think the most surprising part for me was the decline of the defense. And I understand that Saleh had his fingerprints all over that. But I didn't think I was prepared for the decline that happened so quickly when Ulbrich took over. Because even though now he had those CEO head coach responsibilities, there was still loads of talent on that squad. And based on that alone, they were a tough matchup for a lot of teams week in and week out, but it just didn't seem like they had the want to or they had the juice. And as a result, it was a very disappointing division finish. You guys finished 0-2 against the Bills last season after many predicted you guys would actually win the division. So, Jared, overall, what were your thoughts on the 2024 season? Some positives maybe, but then, you know, definitely some negatives too.
I think it's really, really important for, I think, the average, and I'm putting this in air quotes, like the average fan of sports to remember how important the actual locker room culture of a franchise is to the success of a franchise. And without getting too inside baseball, I will say this because at least you two know about this. I coached college basketball for 15 years. Whenever I'm clear to do so again, I hope I can get right back into that fray. The most disappointing year of my professional career was the year my team was picked to have the best finish preseason. And what I learned was that I, at that age as a coach, and some of my players, you know, as young leaders, were not prepared to carry the weight of being everybody else's target. And even if your team was in turmoil, and even if your locker room was struggling, everyone else that played you wanted to paste you up and down the court because of all this attention, good or bad, that you were getting and taking away from them. So the Jets, to me, had a lot of really good learning experiences that even though I'm not truly looking forward to this year, I can already tell even early in the offseason, they're learning, which is all you can ask for. But the things they are learning is you do not win football games in the media room. You do not win football games at press conferences. And you do not win football games by making bold proclamations about promises that you cannot keep. So, you know, the thing that really stands out to me is 2 weeks ago when the anonymous polling of the players comes out and the Jets get voted the worst franchise in the NFL, even internally in terms of their operations. That to me, more than any actual, you know, workout component, scheming component, anything, is why the Jets regress defensively. That culture was toxic. I think the vibe in the locker room was, we're not as good as we think we are. We got real problems that we need to sort out. You're watching the franchise implode in front of you. And I think the person in the craziest way ever, the person who comes out of this looking the best, weirdly, is Robert Saleh. He goes right back to being a defensive coordinator. He gets hired mid-season by a new team. So like the immediate feedback was like, no, you know what you're doing. You come with us.
Yeah. He goes to Green Bay in an Aaron Rodgers like troll move as a consultant, and now he's back. I think at a place that really loves him in San Francisco. Like the players,
day,
yeah,
the
they
day
love
the
him
off
there.
Season started.
Yes, yep. They love him there.
Well, I was talking to somebody I know who's a diehard 49ers fan. He was elated. He was like, I'm so happy Saleh's back. Like the defense is going to be like back to the, you know, mid 2015s when it was absolutely lights out under Saleh.
Yeah. I mean, that defense, and it was so clear, they've been trying to replace Saleh as a coordinator ever since he left. I think Shanahan's gone through like three or four different coordinators in the time Saleh's been gone. And, and that defense just lost their identity when he left. So he's back. I think he's in a much better situation right now. But Jared, hopefully your Jets for the 2025 season are going to be in a much better situation too. You guys do have some resources to work with. You got some draft capital, and you've already made some free agent moves too. Yes. JJ, why don't you set up the 2025 season for our good friend Jared here so we can let him cook a little bit?
Oh boy.
Yes. So, we have $37 million in cap space, 8 total draft picks, including 3 in the top 100. And we need from you, after considering that, your top 3 priorities for 2025.
So the very first priority, I want to actually echo new Jets DM Darren Mooney, who says on the day that he and Aaron Glenn are introduced, our priorities are to draft well, trade up for talent that we really want if we think we need to, develop young talent and keep them here. We are not going to be like the thing you need to know about us is we are not going to be we're going to make free agent splashes right now. That's not where we are as a franchise. So priority number one for me is do that. You know, Dan and I had already spoken that this is not a skill position heavy draft. Once you get out of, you know, 3 or 4 names in the first round that probably aren't going to fall to number 7 anyway. And I think between signing Justin Fields, which we'll talk more about in a moment, and committing to some what I'll call B-level defensive free agents that are young and maybe looking for an opportunity to grow and develop in a new system, I think you've already made your messaging pretty clear. We're punting on key skill positions. We're gonna draft defense. We're gonna draft key offensive line positions, and we're gonna develop what we have. So that's thing number one for me. Thing number two for me is I think Aaron Glenn is the perfect candidate for the Jets right now. Not only is he truly one of the best football players in the history of that franchise, multi-time Pro Bowler, all-decade team member, and a great defensive back who will be mentoring a group that desperately needs that mentorship, right? He also is coming from, in my opinion, the best coached, that doesn't mean the best team, but the best coached franchise in the NFL. Incredibly innovative offense, hard nose, high risk, high reward defense. But more importantly, as I was mentioning earlier to you, Dan, a franchise that over the last 5 years has developed an ethos of leadership and buy-in amongst the locker room, right? So key number two is Aaron Glenn is going to try his damnedest to make the Jets a, you know, New York version of the Detroit Lions. And now that brings me to part three. Take what you have and let those pieces cook. And I think the signing of Justin Fields is outstanding, 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 outstanding. A, you take all the pressure off yourself from drafting Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, and I don't think either of them are actually going to be sustainably good. I do not like either of their upside. Part two of that is you immediately go out and you secure Justin Fields' center from college. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. I want to look really quick. Josh Myers from the Green Bay Packers. Then you reunite him with his favorite target in college, Garrett Wilson. And Garrett Wilson, who basically says to the executives, I need you to give me the ball twice as much as you did last season. The immediate offseason response is, cool, got you. Here's your dude. He'll give you the ball as much as you want. And finally, the last thing that the Detroit Lions had on the offensive side of the ball, a two-headed running back attack that played selflessly, did not care about one another's metrics and touches, and in my opinion, could have made a Super Bowl run had one of them not gotten hurt. And now we're looking at Breece Hall, who's already proven that he could be a guy, and Braylon Allen, who, in my opinion, was the brightest spot in a dark year for the Jets last year. So you have a lot of pieces there. If the ethos is, and this is clearly the messaging, like last year when I told you the Jets were going to suck, I think it was a bit more surprising, right? This year, it's pretty clear already, right? This is not the Super Bowl year, right? So if it's not going to be the year, let these pieces cook and see who's actually going to be most worth developing in the long run. Because, you know, quickly bringing back that fandom in the 90s, JJ, what if Justin Fields is the next, like, lost veteran who comes in and just becomes this, like, I only need to pass 25 times a game, but I can use my wheels and I can make plays happen and I can manage. And I truly can see that in this year's team.
Oh, it's great points. And I think that you're right. We can know from being NFL fans that I can't think of a team that bought its way to a championship. I can think of teams who traded and bartered their way to a championship by selling away their future.
The Rams a couple of years ago come to mind.
Exactly the Rams. Right. That's the exact team I was thinking of. But for the most part, the only way to build a championship roster is to literally draft, develop, and re-sign. That's it. We know that for decades now. You have to get the QB, and then you have to draft and develop and re-sign. You cannot buy yourself through free agency because it's just the free agent system is built for players to get their giant payday. And it's not an unreasonable thing to see that after people are making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, the desire kind of falls out of some guys. It takes a special character to still put in the incredible hours once you know your generational wealth is secured. And so I have a couple of re-signings to ask you about, Jared, because I'm not as familiar with these players. One aside, Braylon Allen was my like draft crush running back.
God.
Last year, I wanted so badly for the Bills to get him because just the way he churns up yards, he's like a bigger, better built Isaiah Pacheco before Isaiah Pacheco got hurt. And that like he punishes the ground for daring to be in front of him. And I just love that about the way he runs.
Don't you just love big legged running backs like that that just big, run angry?
Thick tanks. Absolutely. Yeah. But anyway, aside from that, the team re-signed Jamie and Sherwood to a big deal. This is one of their biggest, apart from Justin Fields and Brandon Stevens, we'll talk about in a moment. Yeah. One of their biggest deals, they re-signed Jamie and Sherwood. Tell me about that player. Do you think that's a good investment?
He's the QB of the defense. I think that what people thought Mosley was for them, Sherwood is. Mm. And again, history, right? When I think about the two franchises in the NFL that cannot escape their fates, I think of the Chicago Bears and the New York Jets. And whereas the Chicago Bears kind of were like, we've never done it with offensive skill positions, we got to do it a different way. What do the Jets always, always, always have? They always have crazy middle or off-ball linebacker that quarterbacks the defense. Whether it was the David Harris or Bart Scott regime, whether it was Brian Cox the generation before that, they always have someone facilitating the defense that is that, to your point, JJ, the spiritual, emotional leader where you can give them all the money in the world and they still just want to go out and be a dominant defense. Mm-hmm. Given how little room they really have to cook because of what they did to themselves trying to be, we're going to buy everybody to win the Super Bowl, I think they're doing the correct thing with that signing, which is, again, going back to the new GM's ethos, this is a guy we want to retain that will help us develop. And if that results, like if that's the only key thing you can do, right? And you can't do anything else because you want to shore up, maybe Sauce Gardner has a better year, rebounds, you want to give him a better contract next season. Same with Garrett Wilson. Same with any of these other young players coming into contract years. I'd rather make the savings now in year one of a throwaway year.
Sure. No, that makes sense. And the earlier you sign a player, the cheaper it's going to be no matter what, always, right?
Didn't give the market an opportunity to speak.
Exactly. And then Jamin Davis on the edge. Tell me about this guy.
I'm less enthused, but I get it. So this is now where we get to the point where I don't have the exact figure, but I know it's less than $400,000. So the Jets are rolling over the lowest amount of cap availability in all of football from last season to this season. So not only do you have to clean up this really like generational mess that you've made, but you also don't really have the financial wiggle room to kind of give you a shot of adrenaline to start that process off. So what we're seeing, and you know, I don't want to insult these people, but we're seeing people that if we were to judge their careers to this point, they're 27 or younger, they have been serviceable, whether it's been wrong fit, not enough development, and you know, these are all C-minus to B-minus acquisitions that are not of substantial risk to you because you're not paying a lot of money. Jamin Davis is in that category, JJ. I also think that safety Isaiah Oliver is in that category. I also think that Brandon Stevens from the Ravens is in that category because you want to think to yourself, oh, Ravens, that's right. They're like the best defense ever, but last year they weren't. And last year he was very, very inconsistent in the backfield. The biggest problem I think the Jets are going to have this year is defensive back. They lose literally all of their safeties, right? So now you have to plug and play. The only remaining key defensive back is Sauce Gardner, who, you know, cycling back to our discussions this time last year, we were kind of in agreement, like maybe he's not the shutdown corner we all think. And I think he didn't necessarily regress as much as it was exposed that he's still got a lot of work to do once holding penalties get called on him.
Yeah, once the refs decide that they're going to, you know, make it a point of emphasis to get on the handsy CBs in a game, Sauce's game was shut down this year.
I like to think it was the highlight reel we put on Instagram of all of Sauce Gardner's holds that really awakened the NFL to this this travesty and injustice of misplay calls. So
I'm visualizing Ed Hockley in the middle of a stressful weightlifting workout, watching your video on Instagram and calling up his son and be like, dude, you gotta see this.
Buffalo bread. Oh my God, I gotta call Sean.
Yeah. We gotta get them on this. Also, apparently we were wrong on the spot of the ball in the AFC Championship game.
They
Josh
were
Allen
wrong
had
on
a first
all
down.
Of the spots of the ball. We haven't had a chance to talk about this, JJ.
No,
all the spots were bad. The Kincaid spot before.
Yeah,
okay, sorry. Go. Okay, sorry.
Jared, sorry.
This is Jets time. My
this
bad.
This is Jets time. We're back to it.
I think I'm a bad Jets season away from just becoming a Bills fan. So we're like, we could talk about this all you want.
You'd be welcome to. You'd be welcome here, sir. You'd be welcome here.
Yeah.
Bar bill on me anytime. Let's go.
Yeah. The amazing thing about it is like the day you actually decide that in your heart, when you open the fridge, there'll just be a container full of a dozen hot wings and blue cheese. Like it just happens. It just manifests. It's amazing. People don't realize it. It's like a miracle that happens to all those.
I'm visualizing Fievel goes west from my childhood. Like what's on the other side of Bill's fandom?
Gold.
The streets are paved with blue cheese.
Yes,
here we go.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Yes.
Okay, then let's talk, you know, Jared, I want to hear about Justin Fields. I mean, you mentioned his running ability, his multi-factor, you know, attack method, the fact that you're reuniting him with Garrett Wilson, got his center in town. Like this is to me, looking at the Jets offseason is like the way they should have done it, but it was like they did it bizarro version with Aaron Rodgers. They're like, oh, we're gonna get Aaron Rodgers and Alan Lazard and his terrible offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, and we're gonna just keep bringing all of this trash into the room, and throw giant gobs of money at it, and that's gonna fix everything. This offseason, I'm like, oh, this is a rational, reasonable approach to having a tight cap, cleaning up messes, and trying to focus on assembling a team through the draft. Like this is what this is supposed to look like.
Of any sport, JJ, I have always felt that winning NFL teams are the ones that most similarly echo a college ethos. The NBA is such a different sport than college basketball. Major League Baseball is, you know, completely different than any other sport out there, especially because of the way that skill positions are defined and the way that money goes. Even in the NHL, you know, the way that they draft and then develop people through two different farm systems. The thing that has always stuck out to me with NFL programs are NFL franchises are always culture oriented. The teams with the most consistent cultures always do the best. And for a sport that truly, I mean, the NFL as we know it is not super old, right? It's, you know, like we're not old and we've lived through more than half of the NFL's history. That's pretty wild, right? So when I think about that, I see a league where we have seen time and time again teams with megastars crumble in the playoffs because they didn't have the culture, right? So, JJ, to your point, they're doing this the right way. Where I think it's going to be most interesting is with Justin Fields. I think back about a month ago to the New York Post reporting that the Jets essentially gave an ultimatum to Aaron Rodgers that was essentially like, you're either going to behave like a cultural leader or we're not going to keep you. And then, according to the reporting, Rodgers was like, I'm ready to do it. And Aaron Glenn was like, I'm not sure I buy it. And,
it's amazing.
You know, now let's take that exact messaging, right? And let's put it on a guy who's in his early to mid-20s, who this, like, if I were Justin Fields, I wouldn't know what to make of my own career. I nearly lead the Chicago Bears to the postseason in my rookie year, and then the Bears want to get rid of me, except all of the Bears supporters are like, this is my guy. Right? So he's probably chomping at the bit to have an opportunity to lead. He goes to Pittsburgh. They start with a winning record and they bench him and they don't let him run.
Yeah.
And they don't, like, he doesn't look like himself out there. And then all of a sudden, like, he's literally glorified Tim Tebow. They have him going in for H-back packages.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I bet you if you're Aaron Glenn and you say everything to Justin Fields that Aaron Rodgers was on the fence about, Justin Fields goes, yes, let's go. I'm in. Give me a shot here.
This feels like the Jets' opportunity to finally be the landing spot for the cast-off quarterback. The Jets this year could be Minnesota with Darnold. They could be the Seahawks with Geno Smith. Oh, wait. Those were both also Jets
quarterbacks? Yeah.
Both the former rehabbed Jets quarterbacks. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. But, like, that's what I mean is to your point, culture, it comes first, because that was situations where the team was not about development players. Like, there's a lot of people in the media space who say that the Jets franchise for the past 15 to 20 years has been one of the worst at developing young talent and maintaining them and like building a roster in that way. And that, I think, is has been evident. And hopefully this, for your sake and your franchise's sake, is the turnaround. My only question about Aaron Glenn, and you may be able to answer this, what particular body part is he going to recommend they bite during his press conference preseason? Because we know that's how he's going to bring the culture. Like, that's part of it.
Well, is it elbows? You know, if you acknowledge Jets history, you have to lean towards feet.
Okay.
But if it's not.
If you know, you know. Oh my God, Jared.
Yeah. No, I think, but you know what's funny? Let's, even considering that, and I'm sorry, for those who do know, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Jesus. It's like burned in my brain now. Thank you.
Yeah, don't worry. Did you know Aaron Glenn also has a Mark Sanchez tattoo, but nobody knows why and you can't ask him about it?
Oh my God. So many people are going to be Googling feet and the New York Jets after this podcast.
It's okay. The good news is I'm saving all of my Brett Favre stuff. So, So for me, I think that young quarterback with a lot to prove and a chip on his shoulder. This is the reason why I like this so much. If you were to ask me, what if it doesn't work out? I would shrug my shoulders at you and say, I didn't want to draft a quarterback this year anyway. And we'll draft a quarterback next season where there's going to be more skill players in the draft. And like, cool. If you're already using this year as a developmental year, why not do this? Why not take a flyer on this guy who has, I mean, his evals out of the draft were better than any of these quarterbacks that the Jets have botched. So why not?
Fields was one of my favorite QBs coming out of that draft. And I maintain to this day that the Bears did nothing to build around him. Absolutely nothing. I think this is a great opportunity for him because, unlike Pittsburgh, the Jets actually want him. And yes, I think the $10 million extra dollars they guaranteed him had a factor in him going from Pittsburgh to the Jets. Mm-hmm. But I think more is the money and the pitch that they made showed that they cared about him, they cared about his development, and that they actually had a place for him on the team. Even last season, I think in hindsight being what it is, he was always going to be a placeholder for an absolutely cooked Russell Wilson. That was always going to be the plan. And I don't think they utilized him properly in Pittsburgh, but I also think it was an absolute confidence shot for him as well. 100%. And I think, yeah, and this doesn't happen with many players, but I think he can rebuild his confidence going to the Jets because he's with the right coach and an organization that has shown that they want him and that they're going to allow him to take his lumps. And it's also a signal that we are not going to, potentially not going to draft like a Shedeur Sanders, a Cam Ward, a Jackson Dart with one of our top picks. Like, it's going to be you this season, dude, and we're going to support you in that development. I just think it's great for a great foot or a potentially great football player, and it's exactly the right move for the Jets. It raises the floor of that offense with both his throwing ability, but more importantly, his mobility too. You're in a division that has where defenses have a problem defending mobile QBs, the Bills chief among them. You add that wrinkle to the offense, it may not win you the division, but damn, it's going to make things a lot closer, and it's going to keep that offense on the field longer than Aaron Rodgers or Zach Wilson could these past couple of years. So, Jared, man, I think that's great. All right. We are coming, sadly, to the end of our time with you, but we cannot let you leave without getting some of the ultimately almost always 100% right Jared hot takes. So, we're going to go lightning round with this. We got five takes for you, and we're going to do our best to keep it within 5 minutes. So 1 minute per take. All right.
Oh, I can do that. Let's go.
All right. I'm going to take the first couple, and then JJ, you want to bring up with the last three?
Yep.
You good with that?
We'll do. Yep.
All right. So the Jets make the playoffs if blank happens.
No pressure when I say this.
Justin Fields sneaks his way into the Pro Bowl as a quarterback and just becomes a like passing, rushing dual threat.
Nice. I like it. I like that a lot. I think a lot of it's going to hinge around him. Jared, does the defense under Aaron Glenn rebound this year?
This is where I'm going to make up for lost time. Yes.
Nice. Why are you so confident about it? Because you do have some holes on the roster, and Glenn is going to take more of a probably a man-based approach with his DBs. And you've got Sauce, but you really don't have a lot of other man DBs on that squad. So what makes you so confident that you guys are going to be able to rebound this year?
I don't think I've had as much confidence as an incoming coach as I have in Aaron Glenn after seeing what he did with the Lions last year. So if the Lions get to go to the second round of the playoffs, literally with 12 defensive players on injured reserve, right? He's playing a second unit in almost every position of that defense. If that's what he has to work with the Jets, we're going to be okay. He's got a lot of, and again, we speak to the culture thing. I think very intentionally, he has brought in his first free agent acquisitions, aside from Justin Fields, a lot of young guys who he's basically saying, put your trust in me. I'm going to give you your shot. And
nice.
And his body of work is, I just did that with the second string defense.
Nice.
I'm all in on his
love
defense.
It.
All in.
Love that confidence. And this segues beautifully to JJ's question.
I love that optimism too. And my question is, Aaron Glenn is a coach of the year candidate if this happens.
If the offense can match what I think he's capable of doing defensively. And I think the big question mark here is their new GM is a quarterback. I'm putting it in air quotes. He did play in the NFL, right? That's not an easy thing to do, but you know, like a cup of coffee in the NFL versus I'm John Elway kind of thing.
Right.
So, you know, that's piece one. Piece two is there's a lot of young and unproven pieces, which you both have mentioned. So, you know, he really can only be as good as his unproven offensive coordinating team. And I think we know what he wants to do, but the difference between wanting to do it and actually doing it is going to be how well Justin Fields can perform and how consistently some, for lack of a better word, mercurial young offensive players have handled themselves over the last two seasons.
Well said. I like it. And don't worry, don't stress too much about your time. You're doing fine. And my last two questions should be quick ones. So I've got a tangent for one beat. Which unit, offense or defense, do you think is going to be better for the Jets and give us quick anticipated rankings of them within the league? So like defense is a top 15, offense is bottom third, whatever you believe it's going to be.
I think the defense will be better than the offense, but I think that we're going to get some throwback Jets figures. And I think even if the offense is middle of the pack, like I can see a top 12 or better defense.
Nice.
I can't see a better than 18 offense, but I can see a top 10 or better running game. And the biggest thing that Aaron Rodgers did, and this is, you have to remember this, Aaron Rodgers was responsible for tanking the rushing game of the Jets last season because of how many calls out of runs at the line of scrimmage happened. The year before, Breece Hall was getting 25 plus touches between handoffs and dump passes. Unproven Justin Field with check down routes to Breece Hall and Allen behind him. Like, this is...
That's good.
Yeah. Run heavy is my guess.
Okay. Yeah. So a bottom half ranked offense, but the rushing attack is going to be a premier. Yeah.
Yes.
Premier feature.
That's got spicy. It. I could see that happening.
Yeah. I like that. All right. So my last two, this is true, false, easy, quick.
Oof.
Justin Fields is a top 15 QB in the NFL. True or false?
Not yet.
Top 15. Not yet. Okay.
He's not top 15.
Do you believe that this is a season after which he could be considered in that kind of ranking?
100%.
Okay.
I think so much of modern quarterbacking is how your team uses you.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Smart. All right. Last one. Final lightning round take. Justin Fields is the blank best QB in the AFC East. So we're asking you to rank within the AFC East four presumed starters. Where does he land? We have Drake
Right now, unfortunately, he's fourth of four.
Okay.
But I think that's subject to change. I mean, we never know with
Tua.
And, you know, it's funny. I I'm high on what the Patriots can do with Vrabel, but it comes down to, you know, how Vrabel decides to use and someone who actually plays an awful lot like Justin Fields. So, you know, we'll see, but I four for now and subject to change. But again, and I think this is the most important thing, as history has proven with the Jets, Justin Fields doesn't need to be one or even two of four for the Jets to be a very successful franchise.
Joe Flacco has a Super Bowl ring. That's what I always say.
When Trent Dilfer's got one, yeah, right?
Whenever anyone's like, can a game manager win the whole damn thing? Yes, absolutely.
Nick 100%. Foles has one. I mean, let's just run down the list.
Yeah,
right.
Right. Well, and I have to say, we started, I glanced at the recording time. We started at 30 minutes and like 5 seconds, and we finished at exactly 35 and 5 seconds. You did a perfect lightning round, even with a bonus.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
amazing.
I can't wait for the fridge magnet. I'm sure it's in the mail.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely is. Jared, as always, man, thank you for joining us. Your insights into the Jets at any point in the season, off season, postseason, during the season, excellent. We appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll be bringing you back soon for our AFC East mock draft. We're looking forward to it. All right.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and of course, Aaron Rodgers. I'll see you in hell.
That's the best way to finish.
That's great. We're not even going to do a Go Bills. It's just going to be Aaron Rodgers go to hell.
Go to hell.
Awesome. Have a good one, sir.
All right. Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. We have our off-season extravaganza, setting the stage for what we want the Bills to do in the off-season. Given that we are now on the second day of the new league year, we have some free agency moves that have been made. We have some very significant and some less significant contracts to discuss. Dan, how we doing?
Doing good, sir. Glad to be talking Buffalo Bills football again on the pod. For those of you who are just joining us, please do not skip the Friends of the Pod episode that is the lead into this one with our good friend Jared, our resident Jets expert. As always, he is bringing the knowledge and the heat about the Jets' 2025 off-season plans here, speaking with a little bit of cautious optimism, which was new for him. And I was really glad to hear that tingle of hope in his voice this year.
Yeah, we care. We may hate the Jets, but we care about the people that love them.
The people whose lives they ruin.
Yes, exactly.
All right, man. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about the Bills. This has been a very Bean off season to me. He has taken care of business, signing a lot of the homegrown talent, which has been his MO over the course of the year. I got to say, managed the cap very well, not just for this season, but into the future too, and bringing in some new interesting pieces. I don't think Bills fans are necessarily content because they haven't seen a splashy move yet. There was a lot of talk about Myles Garrett, Max Crosby, Micah Parsons was floating out there as a potential trade candidate as well at one point, TJ Watt. That hasn't come to fruition, that big splash move. But Bean is doing Bean things, and he is making sure that the floor of this roster remains competitive and that the Bills can, you know, make another playoff run this year, JJ. So where do you want to start? You want to start with some of the new faces in the clubhouse, or you want to start with some of the extensions of the homegrown guys?
Yeah, let's start with kind of stay at home first, because I think that's, you know, let's follow the blueprint that Brandon Bean follows as well with his team building is, you know, who has he extended, re-signed, et cetera. And so, you know, we kicked off the offseason with an extension for Khalil Shakir, which I think everyone was very happy about. 4 years, $60 million, which is, you know, a $15 million plus with incentives per year average. You're not going to get much better value than that, because a lot of wide receivers, he's not like an elite outside wide receiver one, and we all know that. But what he provides to the offense is that kind of, that like Julian Edelman, Cooper Kupp, you know, like the guy who can work the middle of the field, is open even when he's covered, does a lot of amazing things after the catch, and has like a 98% career catch rate. Like that kind of reliability and chemistry with Josh Allen cannot go, you know, underestimated. And I think this deal was incredibly reasonable. And something that, you know, I mentioned in our Friends of the Pod episode with Jared, it's not uncommon for people to make an incredible amount of money and then take it out of gear. Khalil Shakir strikes me as one of those people. He gets picked on by his teammates for still driving like a 10-year-old Subaru. Like, not in it for that. Like, he is in it because he cares about his craft. He cares about his legacy, and that's the kind of guy you want to resign. So I think that was a smart resigning. How do you love I know you love Khalil Shakir.
I love Khalil Shakir. I've loved him since we've drafted him.
Yeah.
And it just is it's such a great contract. I can't tell you how spectacular monetarily this contract is going to be for the Bills. We've seen how the cap hits are so spread out over the course of the length of the contract. The percentage of the cap hit that it takes is minuscule. And when you look at how broken the wide receiver free agent market is right now with some of the money that's being doled out to guys that are less proven than Shakir, I mean, this is the epitome of a hometown discount, in my opinion. It pays a player a good amount of money, but by the same token, it is not putting an undue burden on the team. I mean, it's just, you do not find deals that are as team-friendly as this in this day and age for a guy, quite frankly, that could have hit the open market and maybe made 1.5 times this. So great for the Bills to do it. And it's a contract, as Bean's contracts tend to, that is going to age really well as the salary cap continues to go up and the AAV on these wide receiver contracts continues to go up as well. T. Higgins will reset the market. Ja'Marr Chase will reset it shortly thereafterwards. This Shakir contract is going to look great 2, 3, and even 4 years down the road.
Well, and I think that, you know, somebody like Chris Godwin getting 3 years for 60, you know, $66 million, like that's what a reasonable, good, solid wide receiver is getting these days. And to get Shakir at an average of 15 is just
wild.
Outstanding hometown discount. He believes in what they're doing, and it helps to be, you know, to be receiving the ball from the league MVP and Josh Allen. Terrell Bernard, another player from that same draft, the linebacker and captain of the quarterback of the defense, 4 years, $50 million. Again, completely reasonable, $12.5 to $13 million per year average value, which is reasonable. I mean, it makes him like the 12th or 13th highest paid linebacker in the league. And that, I think, is fine. I think he sort of stepped back a little bit this year in terms of splash plays, but I think a lot of that had to do with him needing to pick up the slack from some of the other secondary players and not having an outstanding space-eating one-technique defensive tackle in front of him. I think DaQuan Jones was not as good this year. Ed Oliver was slumping at times. They were facing, you know, pretty substantial injuries along the interior of the defensive line. So he was getting, he's not a linebacker that plays very well in space with linemen on him. And so he really needs a stout defensive line in front of him to be his best. And hopefully the Bills can get that fixed.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. The D-line has to keep this linebacker core clean. And it doesn't just impact Bernard, it impacts Milano and the play style he rolls out there week in and week out as well. So Bernard, to me, again, very reasonable contract for the QB of your defense. And the value added that he brings is the green dot on the field, how quickly he has assimilated to that defense over the past couple of years. I mean, it feels like he has been the green dot on that defense for years. If you look back at it, he's only had really 2 full seasons with it since Edmonds left. So his progression has absolutely skyrocketed. And it feels like he is a player who's ascending, who still has another peak that they can hit in their development. And I'm really looking forward to him hitting it as a Buffalo Bill. Again, great re-signing by Beaton.
Yep. And then, you know, of course, Gregory Rousseau, another person who the Bills have drafted and they're re-signing and developing. He was going to play in his 5th-year option this season, which was a pretty sizable, I think $17 or $18 million fully guaranteed cap hit. And so they got him done in a deal, 4 years, $80 million, annual average value of $20 million a year, which is reasonable. I think it's a little high for his caliber of play because he's never been a double digit sack player. But if you look at his advanced analytics, he is the kind of player you want on your defense for years. Like, you just need some, he's the Phil Hansen to a Bruce Smith. You need that splash player on the other side. Because Greg Rousseau is very, very stout. He's very good against the run. He's good at setting the edge. His pressure rate is outstanding. It just, you know, there's nobody, when nobody's chasing a quarterback into his arms, he's not going to have outstanding numbers.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, the cliche of the offseason amongst Bills Mafia has been Greg Rousseau is Robin and he needs his Batman. And I get it, but when you talk about all of his advanced metrics compiled together, I love Havoc ratings. This offseason, I've just been obsessing over this new statistical metric that I now have to play with for the pod. He's eighth in overall Havoc rating. His pressures, his hits, his sacks, forced fumbles, the way he dirties the pocket, his ability to defend in the run, though there are points on film, particularly in the postseason, where Baltimore and KC were not afraid to run at him, and we can talk about that more, right? But when you take the whole package in the aggregate, he was a top 10 edge guy, and you're getting him with, I think, the 12th, somewhere around the 12th highest cap percentage for an edge on any given team. But Myles Garrett resets the market. Max Crosby resets the market. Trey Hendrickson with a new deal may also reset the market or come close. Again, it's a lot of money on paper right now, but as we move forward in the next 2 to 3 years of this contract, it's going to age very, very well for overall percentage of cap hit. Again, another masterclass by Bean. To lock up a guy, I think I would have been comfortable putting in a trade for a Max Crosby or a Myles Garrett or a Michael Parsons, but given that those did not come to fruition, equally happy to lock him up and now find who his running mate on the other end is going to be, which the Bills think they may have done as we get to new faces here moving forward.
Well, just one thing on Myles Garrett. I have to say this. I want to use the very small pulpit I have to broadcast my feelings about this.
I know what's about to happen.
Myles Garrett. Yeah. So Myles Garrett comes, he stands up and he says, "I have dreamed since I was a small child to play someday for a championship contending team and to hoist the Lombardi Trophy as a Super Bowl champion. And that is why I am demanding a trade out of the Cleveland Browns." And then the Cleveland Browns are like, "But money?" And he's like, "Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, my childhood dreams are worth that, whatever that is that you're offering me. Sure, I'll take that and be a complete loser for the rest of my time."
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Myles Garrett thing was a little heartbreaking. He is the one I think Bills Mafia became most fixated on.
Yes.
In like a big trade, like trade the first round, maybe a future,
trade
maybe
everything.
Greg Rousseau, right? Like in a Myles Garrett trade, I feel like only Josh Allen would have been off the table. Right?
That's the only sacred thing I would have protected. Like I literally trade any piece,
yes.
any piece at all. I would. This is almost like, you know, against the rules and laws of Bills Mob. I would have traded Deion Dawkins for Myles Garrett.
You know, no, I'm kidding. I was about to make some sort of like, well, you know, based on his age and current play right now. Yeah, I know. But it's true. I mean, I think how you've seen the Bill, how we have experienced our Buffalo Bills exit over the course of the last several seasons, it's really clear the floor on this roster and this team continues to be high, but it needed a star or two, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, is upgrades. And Garrett, with the timing of his trade request, felt like the guy that we could potentially nab, work out a new restructured deal, and felt like a guy who, at least for the next 2 to 3 seasons, we could potentially rely on to be that Batman for Greg Rousseau and be that star that you've got to plan around on the defense. To be clear, the Bills are still lacking that, and I don't know that they're going to find it in free agency or the draft potentially, but that remains to be seen. Yeah. So we could be having this conversation at the very same time next year where it's like, man, the Bills are like one Myles Garrett away from.
We still need that
almost
guy.
There, right?
We need that difference maker.
We're almost there.
So, yeah, I know. And so, like, that being said, it's not going to happen. He decided to sell all of his morals and character for money, and that's okay.
That's lighting him on fire.
That's his choice. You know, it's a stupid amount of money, like literally a stupid amount of money. So,
yeah.
I can't imagine. Like, and I'm never going to be in a position where anyone's like, "Hey, will you have literally no dignity for a giant amount of money?" Like, I can't promise that I wouldn't be like,
right,
you know what? Dignity's overrated. Give me all of the monies.
Right.
You know?
It's the equivalent of if someone offered you and I $40 million to turn this from a Bills podcast into a Dolphins podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
Or
that's
like
what it is.
Just a podcast that rehashes every game of Tom Brady's career in explicit detail. Right.
Yes. Like, Man in the Arena podcast version with Dan and JJ.
And we just go game by game for all 22 years or whatever it was.
Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
No, like, exactly right. If that offers out there, actually.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. We're not above it.
We're not above it.
We're for sale.
Yeah. That's what, So I say all that, you know, of course, like, you know, it's a stupid amount of money. And like, he does care about the Cleveland franchise. That was pretty clear. I think it was just a, you know, may have been a negotiating tactic, may have been he just pivoted when the money, the dollar sign showed
up. It's an obscene amount of money.
So,
it's so obscene. Yeah.
It really is. The highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. Okay, so I'm going to throw a bucket of them at you to comment on. Ty Johnson, Reggie Gilliam, both in the backfield, Reed Ferguson, the long snapper, and DeMar Hamlin. All of them averaging, the biggest contract of all of them is $2.5 million per year for 2 years for Ty Johnson. Everything else is $2 million or minimum. Thoughts?
I was shocked at how little we got Ty Johnson back for.
Me too.
I was stunned by that. And I think that is, it is unusual for a player like Ty Johnson who has flashed, and there is a team out there, maybe it's Dallas, maybe it's Cleveland, who's like, listen, we're going to make you the focal point of the run game. You're going to get touches. You're going to do this, right? It's not just about the money. It's about the positioning in the offense. And with the way he has flashed in clutch moments over the past 2 years, I have no doubt he not only would have gotten more money should he have chosen to go to another team, but he would have had a bigger role. But he decided to stay here in Buffalo, and I think that's honestly great for this running back room. So you bring back the complement of James Cook, Ty Johnson, and Ray Davis, that mighty, mighty trio in that running back room, and it allows like a 100% continuity in the run game from last year to this year. I love the Ty Johnson signing, love the Reggie Gilliam signing. He was such a factor in the postseason for us when we were going up against bigger squads and had to get a little bit heavier. And Dalton Kincaid was such a liability in the run block game. Like, when you go back and watch the film, Gilliam was literally hero balling and saving James Cook from almost certain doom on so many plays in the postseason.
He was throwing his body like a wrecking ball at incoming threats in such an incredible fashion.
So lucky to have that guy.
In a world where like the fullback position has been so incredibly devalued, when you have a good one, pay them the like slightly above vet minimum it takes to keep them, right? For as long as they
same as
like a long snapper, right? Like if you've got a good one, just whatever the going rate is for that position, because it's never going to break the bank. It's never going to be over 1%, you know, 0.5% of the cap.
Yeah,
just pay it for as long as they're good and as long as their career is persisting, because it's such an important component, especially with this new offense under Joe Brady and the running focus.
Absolutely. DeMar Hamlin, I think, is the one that's probably the most controversial amongst Bills Mafia. I get it. He knows the defense. He's had starting reps within the defense. And I do think his film was better than his low light moments in the postseason, right? And in some in regular season games. He is the epitome of a stabilizer on that defense. He's not afraid to throw down on the run game if they need him to. He is serviceable as that rangy type of free safety role as well. And I think the contract is reasonable enough to where if they draft a Malachi Starks and he outcompetes Hamlin, then Hamlin's a really good depth piece. And I think we tend to forget he's a maven on special teams. So if that's the role he slides back into because he's no longer in a starting role, I think it bolsters a special teams unit that was really lacking last season. So I like it. And I think, listen, there's a lot of negativity around bringing him back for some reason. Dude was a sixth round pick, and he is now in a second contract with the team. Like
for 1 year, $2 million.
Right. Like, this is another find of a defensive back that the Bills have molded into their image that they feel good about rolling out there rep to rep. He's got postseason experience. He's got starting experience. Like, you could do worse and you could pay more for a depth piece in a safety room that still needs to coalesce. I'm okay with it.
And on a team where, you know, culture is important and the spirit of the team is important, this dude has stepped beyond the veil. He knows what the afterlife holds for all of us.
Like, oh my God.
He died
We can't record this late anymore. What are you doing?
He died and came back to life for this team. He's the defensive secondary Jesus. That's all I'm going to say. We can move on.
Oh my God. There's one I want to talk about that you didn't mention.
Okay.
and I want to play 6 degrees of separate of Kevin Bacon with it, because it's Darrington Evans, right? So brought him back, and you know, technically would be the fourth running back in the room, but really they value him in his return capabilities. And I'm fine with them kind of hedging their bets in the return game, because you've got Codrington. Now you've got Evans that's got some of that efficacy to his game as well. But for me, I'm really on Daquan Hardy watch now. And I know that Hardy, for him to come off of the practice squad and get a 53-man roster spot in camp this year, has to flash as a special teams returner. He just has to. He's gotta up the juice in his return game and his return skills. And if he's able to do that, I think we bring not just a great depth piece in the cornerback room, but a true backup nickel to Taron Johnson, who Johnson is amazing, but he's also been banged up at times. And then we're trying to piece together that nickel position. Hardy, to me, is a true nickel backup with some outside efficacy if we really want to go there. But I think it's a great hedge should Johnson, as he continues to age, miss a game here, a quarter there, a couple of games here. But that job got harder with Evans being re-signed. So he's got to displace Codrington in the cornerback room, and then he's got to do the same thing with Evans in the return game too. But I'm on Daquan Hardy watch as a result of that now.
Well, I love what I saw from Daquan Hardy in the preseason for the Bills, and I think that maybe it's potential without, you know, prepping for a draft, without prepping for the combine, without any of that going on, that he could take a step forward this offseason and make a case to replace, you know, Jamarcus Ingram or Cam Lewis in those kind of third, fourth, fifth safety slash DB positions. Because I think
really love that.
And I really like both of those players, but I think that you're always looking for upside, and Daquan Hardy could have up, because he definitely has an athletic profile that's a little bit better when it comes to pure speed than either of them.
I've gotten into a lot of arguments on social media about Daquan Hardy and his potential ability to play on the outside. I always use the Trent McDuffie comp, and I get McDuffie is like one of one in his position group.
Top 25 pick, yeah.
He's the guy we wish we had as opposed to Kyer Elam,
right?
We all know it now.
Who, as we you know, he was traded to, where was he traded
Dallas.
To? Dallas, that's right.
Yep.
And in some miracle, I mean, I don't know how Bean pulls this off. He gets a fifth, was it a fifth back?
Got a fifth.
No,
he's
He had got to a get, fifth he, back. Yeah. He had to give away a seventh, right?
Yep. Gave away a seventh, but got a fifth back as a result of the deal. Just Bean doing Bean things, right?
That's amazing.
It really is an amazing return, right? Given where it was so clear the Bills did not want to put Elam out there anymore.
Well,
so.
Elam's career trajectory, and he's still young, and like, you know, it seems like he's a reasonably good dude. Yeah, I hope the best for him, that this is a refreshing start. He's a CB who doesn't play special teams, like isn't good at special teams, which if you're not, and hasn't shown that he's good enough to also hold down secure a starting role or be better than the fourth best CB on the team with the Bills. So, and it's not like the Bills are loaded with premier talents on the roster at cornerback. So for him not to crack the starting lineup doesn't offer anything in special teams, and Bean to get back a middle round pick for him is just, I don't even know.
It's just wild. It's just wild. And a middle round pick this year too, that he can potentially use to package up and hop back into the third round too. The Bills are sneaky close to being able to have four top 100 draft picks if Bean plays his cards right. So JJ, there's one more extension we should talk about before we get to the fresh faces.
Saving the best for last.
Yes. MVP 17.
Yeah.
Joshua Patrick Allen signs a monster extension with the Bills that is, of course, going to age beautifully. And we got a really candid moment from Josh. I think it was today in an interview that he did for Buffalo Bills media, where he talked about the nature of the negotiations, what he was hoping for out of an extension. And I got to tell you, if you didn't love Josh Allen as a Bills fan before listening to that interview, there is no way. You don't have a heart if you don't love that dude after that interview. He talked about not wanting to put the screws to the franchise, wanting to make sure that the franchise had maximum cap flexibility. And then so many fans feel alienated by rooting for millionaires that are like paid for by billionaires in the NFL. Like, we all kind of square that circle to root for these guys. But Josh gave the most everyman answer when he was asked about about why he didn't feel like he needed to go for more money. And he's like, at this stage in my life, and I'm ad-libbing, but he's like, at this stage in my life, there's nothing I can't do already that another $5 million would allow me to do, right?
And then followed up with like the most wholesome thing ever by saying, like, I got a house, I got a car, I'm doing fine.
I'm good. I'm getting married. I got an MVP. I'm good, man.
So
just, again, the right Josh, absolutely validated again, not just by his performance on the field this season and the MVP and the accolades, but just by the fact that he has stepped up into this leadership role. He is defining the culture of the team with his humility, with his desire to win. And it, the bet that the Bills made on him in the draft has obviously played off. But the bet that they made on him at the beginning of last offseason, where they jettisoned a lot of that veteran talent to reset the cap clock for themselves, that has also paid off. He has stepped up as a leader of men in that clubhouse. And again, the Bills couldn't be happier, I would imagine, with how he has performed both on and off the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, it's really, it's funny because people often talk about, oh, like the best franchise quarterbacks will like hold the team's needs above their own and like give hometown discounts because they know that if they don't, they're not going to have somebody blocking for them. They're not going to have somebody to throw to, right? And like that narrative is out there and people always bring up Tom Brady. But then it turns out that Tom Brady might have been getting back alley deals from the Patriots for tens of millions of dollars the whole time he was there. So he was, they were supplementing his income by paying TB12, his separate incorporated brand, which is like, it just, it something I love, which is tarnishing that legacy. Just like
the
it
Patriots
continues
way.
To do that. Yeah, exactly.
Start an LLC. Hey, if it was now, if Brady was still playing, he would just start a meme coin, right?
Right.
And
he'd
tell the Patriots
just
to
sell
just
the
invest
Patriots
in
meme
it,
coin.
Right?
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, Josh Allen, stand up guy, high character, it seems, and everything right, betting on him and then giving him that opportunity to lead. And now they were also able to add some other pieces, some small, modest pieces. In
floor raisers.
Floor raisers.
Yep.
Just trying to back, I'd consider this trying to backstop the roster against the draft class, right?
Yep.
Trying to make sure that there are bodies in place that they that have you have reasonable experience in the league in case one of the first three picks in the draft that they might want to put in a starting role is not ready for that position.
Correct. Yep. And that's what Bean does. He doesn't like to go into the draft with a glaring need. Mm-hmm. And to me, he's done it twice. He did it last season when he clearly needed a wide receiver and maybe overthought it with Keon Coleman trading back twice and all that other kind of stuff. And he did it in the Kyer Elam year as well, where there was everyone and their brother knew the Bills were going to target a cornerback. And we saw how that turned out well, too. Listen, Bean is not perfect. He's done some great things in the draft. He's done some not so great things in the draft. The Elam year, and even how things maybe played out last year, even though Coleman is still a work in progress, when Bean is backed into a corner where teams know what he's going to do, he just gets a little galaxy-brained. He's always in a better spot when he can go BPA, and that is what this offseason free agent class has been about, filling holes so they can go BPA wherever it is they may draft, right? So where do you want to start? You want to go in like chronological order with the first guy they signed and go on up?
Yeah, absolutely. So bring us in.
All right, so first signing, the big splash of day one in free agency, Joshua Palmer.
Joshua Palmer.
Yes, 25-year-old wide receiver getting about $13 million over the course of 3 years on AAV per year. He is a wide receiver, JJ, that I believe there is some debate on his separation ability. His metrics against man are okay when it comes to separation. He's got a nice route release, and every now and then he will catch a DB sleeping, and he will release for a long ball very, very well. He's not a burner. He has not the speed element that the Bills sorely need in this wide receiver room, but to me, it was a clear signal they were not going to re-sign Amari Cooper unless it was for the absolute right amount. He had the same separation values according to Next Gen Stats as Amari Cooper, with a little bit more juice in the long release game. So he's not going to run by guys, but he's going to run some nice routes every now and then. And if the Bills find themselves in man coverage, it's Josh just eats man apart. and yeah. he is another target for Josh to go to. So backstops the roster against the what seems like imminent loss of Amari Cooper.
Right.
And surprising value on the contract. I think it can go up to like $15 million a year in incentives for Palmer. But I mean, at the end of the day, this is just where the wide receiver market is. It's broken. $13 million for this guy. You're betting on upside.
Yeah. Well, and it feels, I mean, that's almost the same deal that Curtis Samuel is playing under too.
It's just wild.
It's in the same ballpark. And that's the kind of money you have to pay for somebody who's a third or fourth wide receiver on a team these days.
Yep.
And I think that the thing, you mentioned it before, the thing that the Bills have seemed to have done in free agency after re-signing their own is really just betting on upside.
Yeah.
And again, trying to like bring in players that they think are better than the players that they had last year without any huge splashes. So Joshua Palmer is definitely betting on upside. They're saying with... And I mean, he was playing with Justin, why can't I think of his name?
Herbert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was playing with Herbert, who is a very good quarterback, but I don't know that Herbert is a better quarterback than Josh Allen. So seeing what Joshua Palmer can unlock, not playing behind Keenan Allen and Quentin, they were trying to prove that Quentin Johnston was a good pick.
Ladd
McConkey was their darling in this draft.
Yeah. Mike Williams a couple of years ago. Yeah.
He was sort of stuck in this position where he couldn't necessarily get reps. And so in this offense, he is already top three wide receiving targets.
Which is why that's a little concerning to think about, right? Because you don't know what you're getting out of Samuel. And when you look at his separation metrics in zone, against zone, which the Bills see a ton of, right? He's kind of a lane clogger with Curtis Samuel, right? He's actually got worse zone separation metrics than Shakir and Samuel. So really they're going to prioritize him when they think they're going to get man looks. So it's a lot of money for a guy who might net you 3 20-yard touchdowns this season.
Right.
I don't know. I didn't love it on day one.
Bills saw more man coverage than any team in the league last year though.
Mm-hmm. Which is true.
Because teams didn't believe in the Bills wide receiver core, or that the wide receiver core had anyone that could beat them. And that was proven right in a lot of cases, but the Bills also set franchise records for scoring. So we'll see.
And Josh Allen had his best season against man that he's had in a while, right?
Yeah,
and when we say teams play a lot of zone against the Bills, it's still 50% zone. And then most teams
play zone most of the time.
Right. Yeah. Play zone most of the time. The exceptions are, I think the exceptions were the Lions last season, the Vikings last season as
well. Jaguars played almost exclusively man.
Right. And Josh torched them in week 3.
Yeah.
I mean, very few teams are playing 50% or more in man. Mm-hmm. Most teams are playing the majority of their snaps and zone. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the first one. And then I think Michael Hoyt was next.
Yeah. So I will tell you, here's what I want to do with this one. Yeah. So here's what I want to do, though, because, listen, there are a lot of Bills media members and podcasters smarter than us that absolutely love this. To me, this is the Casey Tuhill signing of this year, right? You're betting on athletic traits, but the Bills have never had success taking a positionless player and making him work in this defensive scheme. They just haven't, right? But I'll tell you where it does make sense. And it makes sense when you couple it with the Bosa signing that I don't want to step on because I know we're getting to it next, right? Because that's like a big move so far this offseason, right? But when you look at what what Hoyt's advanced analytics were in the run game, when you pair that with what we know Rousseau can do in the run game and what Epineza has done against the run game before, it makes sense in that you don't actually need to put Joey Bosa out there in situations where it's an obvious run situation. Mm-hmm. You can lean into him and keep him healthy and keep him fresh, hopefully, during the course of the season by using him in pure pass rush situations. Bosa's got juice in the run-stopping game. He's actually above average when it comes to that in a lot of metrics, but Hoyt is going to be like your run eater.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us are hoping because of his RAS score, he's going to be that positionless chess piece that like McDermott had when he was the DC for Carolina. But they've brought guys like this in before and they haven't maximized them. So I look at this as he's going to play on the edge in rundowns. he's going to flip inside in the NASCAR package and probably play next to Bosa sometimes in obvious pass rush situations, and that's really it. I'm like, eh, I'm okay. Like, prove me wrong, but they've never taken a guy like this and they've never fit him into the scheme well.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think, you know, I will say the one time that they did make somebody like this really, like, show out was Lorenzo Alexander, but that wasn't this coaching staff.
That wasn't the staff, that was, right.
No, that was the last time that they've had a player like that who, like, and that's, it's funny because I'd heard somebody else talk about their path to the NFL. Michael Hoyt also started as a lineman, dropped like 60 pounds and became an outside linebacker.
Yeah, he played at 310 at his highest weight.
And so it's an interesting kind of parallel because I think Bills Mafia really remembers from a few of the drought years, Zoe being like a revelation, getting like 13 or 14 sacks in a year in that kind of designated pass rusher style. Hoyt offers a little bit more as a run stopper, and I watched a bunch of his snaps in the past two seasons ago. He played all 17 games. They had injuries, and he started for Bosa, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. No, he played on the Rams.
So yep, he started for one of their premier pass rushers who went down.
They got so hurt over the course of the last couple of years. Yeah.
So anyway, he got a lot of starting snaps, and watching him play reminded me of so many. I think Bills fans are really going to like him. I think he's a likable player to watch because he is like the try hard, tougher path to the league, has always had to work for everything. Like, if you like Josh Allen's story, you're going to like Michael Hoyt's story. I just don't think he's that much of an impact player, and spending $8 million per year. Like, for me, Michael Hoyt or AJ Epineza, one of the two of them might be released next offseason to just get out of under the money, because if they don't show up and like really have good seasons.
Right. I agree. Yeah. I think it's a great bet, again, on upside, mm-hmm. and that's just where the Bills are right now. They have fortified the edge room. It's just, we don't need to beat this dead horse, right? Yeah. Like, where is Casey Tuhill now? Not on the Bills, right? No, like, right. And this is with the signing base.
Where's Von Miller? Gone.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We were all talking about it the same time last year. Casey Tuhill's RAS scores. Oh, the Bills. They finally got an athlete.
Do this stuff. Yeah.
What are we doing with Hoyt? Oh, love his tape. Look at his RAS score. Like,
yeah, he tries hard.
Yeah. Really cool. I would love to be wrong about this. What? And I think we need to be wrong about this because the Bills don't have a lot of margin for error with the line. Yeah.
I hope we're wrong because we've been right too often and it's been bad.
It's been
Trent Murphy? Oh, his RAS.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It's Can we just please get a 370-pound nose tackle to play next to Ed Oliver? Can we just have this thing?
Let's do something differently this time, please.
Seriously, Jesus, God.
Speaking of nose tackles, or tackles rather, Larry Ogunjobi.
Dwayne Carter, you're out.
Yeah, I know.
You're off the island.
Yeah, it's not looking good for Dwayne Carter. It also wasn't looking good for Larry Ogunjobi last season. He had a pretty poor season across the board.
He did.
He was an absolute liability in run defense, and he also offered absolutely nothing in pass rush. So
here's where I'm a little bit more high on him. In Pittsburgh, I'm pretty sure they play a 3-4, right?
Mm-hmm,
so, and we saw this happen with Daquan Jones the first season he came over from Tennessee, where that defense was a multi-gap assignment. And in Buffalo, they pretty much give you a gap to focus on the D-line, right? I think this is going to be the same case here, where Ogunjobi is going to be able to focus on a gap and assignment and not have to worry about covering so much space on the defensive line. And I think that's going to get the best out of him in this scheme as a rotational piece.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't have a lot of hope that this is a good signing. It's like,
worse than Dwayne Carter. He put some bad film. He put out some bad film last year.
He was on the ground like every snap. It was pitiful.
Blown off the ball. Oh my God. Yeah.
Can we just both agree that if the Bills don't use one of their top first two picks on somebody who's like over 320 pounds, that we will jump on the fire bean train?
I will say this. We have learned nothing if we don't use a pick on a giant human to put next to Ed Oliver.
Don't have, And that player needs to play 70% of the snaps.
Yeah, like, it just has to be the case.
They have to, like, we have to modernize this. This, like, let's put a bunch of below average athletes out there for half the snaps of a game is just not, that's not the answer. Like,
and they're smaller than all the guys they're going up against.
Yeah, especially with the league moving towards teams being more run heavy. It is not, oh my gosh. That is the thing about this, the construction of the team and Sean McDermott's defense that has frustrated me the most is, like, every other NFL team in the league, including the Chiefs, understands that your rotation of your defensive line should be a 70-30 or 80-20 situation. Chris Jones does not sit out for more snaps than is absolutely critical for him to not collapse from exhaustion.
Because the guy you're bringing in for Chris Jones is not as good as Chris Jones.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's the thing.
That's the thing, is you cannot have two waves of players at an elite game-changing caliber. So what you then do is you're diluting the pool by overpaying for moderately above average athletes, and you, and therefore in those big moments, nobody's changing the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then you just watch them fail miserably over and over again against the Chiefs.
Yeah. This feels like a copy and paste blueprint from a lot of off seasons we've seen from the Bills before. I think they are, though, clearly showcasing to us what their plan is going to be in the draft. And I think interior defensive lineman is going to be a top priority. And I actually do think, especially with this extra fifth-round pick they've got rolling, I think they're going to trade up to get the guy they want. And I think it's Kenneth Grant. So,
okay.
I think they want to spin on that guy.
I would be so elated if that was the answer.
You're going to need to get up into the teens to get Kenneth Grant.
Do it.
They've got the capital to do it.
Trade.
What the hell are we waiting for?
Trade a two next year if you want to, if somebody doesn't need anything in the fifth round this year. Like,
yeah, seriously.
Do what you got to do.
Get it done. Just get it done.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I was just going to say, speaking of needs, I think that we should also, unless something changes, we should pay attention to cornerback in this draft.
Got
to
happen.
Yep. Because they've got to find somebody. You don't trade away Kyrie Elam and not re-sign Rasul Douglas and not sign any of the other players that are out there. Like, the field is very shallow at this point.
It is. I mean, you're talking about reclamation projects. Like, there's a Jeff Okuda out there who I'd actually love to see Okuda and his skill set in our system. There's all this talk, like, I feel like there is every offseason. We're reading the tea leaves on the coaching hires. Oh, this guy knows man. This guy teaches man. We're going to play more man, right? Yeah, we probably by necessity need to play more man. But this Buffalo Bills unit, and they're telling you this by the defensive line acquisitions they've made, like, they really want to play nickel, and they really want to play too high zone. So, and they're never going to be a 50% or more man outfit. So a guy like Jeff Okuda can come in, and he can adapt to our zone scheme. Jair Alexander, he's been beat up. He's kind of a pain in the butt. But like that dude can play, and if he gets released, I could see him as a 1-year rehab contract that really works out well for the Bills too. So I'm keeping an eye on a couple of these things in the cornerback market. Yeah. But I love some of these studs in the draft.
There
are
some really exciting players in the draft.
Yeah, that's gonna be good.
Siobhan Revell from East Carolina.
Hey, if he's healthy, mint it, right?
Yeah, he looks solid.
A couple of Kentucky guys that I really like. Mm-hmm. And they're fast. This whole DB class was just fast.
Yeah, what the Bills need.
Yes.
Yeah.
If we pick a guy who's got, like, great character traits but runs a 4.5, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
We need speed in the back end, for the love of God.
Dan,
people were running away from Rasul Douglas for all half of the season last year.
Yeah.
Oh, we can run mesh because Rasul can't keep up with us anymore. Let's do that.
Listen, Dan, trust the process. We're going to get a bunch of undersized, middle-tier, great character guys on the defensive line, and we're going to back them up with a bunch of subpar athletes who get absolutely torched in critical moments.
If you are listening to this podcast for the very first time, I promise you we're Bills fans.
We like the Bills.
We love the Bills. Yeah. We bleed for this team. We love this squad. We have just been doing this now for 5 years, but it feels like 50. Because we have these same exact conversations.
We're so at the close.
At the end of every offseason, we have these same conversations because the playoff run ends the same way every time. And the way it ends, we do not address in the following offseason.
That's exactly it. And so, yeah, the always a bridesmaid, never a bride, Buffalo Bills. And we love them.
We do. We love this team. Yeah. Guys, we love this team. Please listen, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your pods. We love this team. We just want fast people, fast humans. Big humans, fast humans on the squad.
All right.
Speaking of big and fast, let's talk about the next one.
Let's talk about Joey Bosa. I hate this pick.
Oh, I'm actually okay with this.
I'll say this. I think this is a half measure when what you really needed was to pry away Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah.
After Max Crosby and Myles Garrett moved themselves off the table, I think what you needed to do was make a hard run at Trey Hendrickson, because I don't think Cincinnati has still not re-signed him at this point, I don't think.
And their asking price has gone up to a first round pick. They want multiple picks, including a guaranteed first round for him. And if you bring in Hendricks, you've got to pay him. You've got to pay Hendrickson.
Yeah.
And he has seen what Crosby has got. Yep. He has seen what Garrett has got. And I think objectively you could argue he's not either one of those two players, but he has been the league leader in sacks for the past two seasons. Right.
Yeah. So what he does provide is reasonable enough that he is a game-changing talent.
Yes.
And that is the move. So Joey Bosa, to me, it's more a disappointment that they didn't make a more substantial move. But the actual move itself is not terrible. Like, you know, there are worse. Like, I think there are edge rushers, Hassan Reddick, there are edge rushers in this league that I would have been more disappointed if they did a half measure to sign. Because I think Joey Bosa is a good player when healthy. That's the big asterisk, though.
Yeah.
He hasn't had more than hasn't had a single season in the last 5 years where he hasn't missed at least two
2021
games.
Was his last, I think, healthy season.
Okay.
I think he missed like the final game of that year because it was like playoff rest or something.
And
I can't remember.
He only missed three games last season with a hip injury. But even that, he only missed three games and still only had six sacks.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, his pressure rate is good. He's still a starting caliber edge. His pressure rate, QB hit rate, all that kind of stuff from last season was still in the top 30s, right? So there are 32 teams in the NFL. He's still a starting caliber edge. He'd be starting for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got more juice in the run defense game than people give him credit for. And I think the way the Bills are building out this defensive line, he's really just going to be a one-year mercenary. He's going to come in and he's going to be a pass rush specialist, which should keep him fresh, keep him healthy. And then for the down and dirty downs, I think we're going to see guys like Hoyt. We're going to see Rousseau out there, obviously, Oliver out there. We're just going to see a different machination or a different formation for this defensive line. But when it's Bosa time, they're going to run him out there. And I wouldn't be surprised if he is now the new Von Miller in the NASCAR package where he flipped Rousseau inside. So you got Rousseau and Bosa overloading the same side of the offensive line. That gets me a little bit excited in pass situations. So we'll see.
Sure. Yeah. And I think for me, the Joey Bosa thing hinges, if this is an excellent gamble, if we're talking this time next year about the Bills' incredible successes in the season, it's going to be because of two factors. One, the Bills fix the interior of the defensive line and get somebody who's a playmaker, large defensive tackle next to Ed Oliver, because I think Ed Oliver is a playmaking defensive tackle only when he's not double teamed. And sometimes when he is double teamed, but we need somebody that the opposing team cannot afford to not double team.
Yes.
That's what has to happen at the other defensive one technique. If they solve that in a reasonable way, I'm guessing through the draft, and Joey Bosa and Greg Rousseau both have healthy seasons, we're going to be talking about how this was such a great investment and how this was such a great gamble.
It's a one-year dart throw.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Who do you want to talk about next? Do we want to just bundle them up?
Yeah. Quick Derek hits? Forrest and Laviska Shenault. Those are the last two, I think.
So I'm excited for Forrest. Shenault is somebody who we actually identified 2 years ago as someone we want to see on the team.
Speedy kind of gadgety guy.
Yep. He's definitely a gadgety guy. I don't think Curtis Samuel needs to worry about his job, but, you know, Shenault could fill that role as a practice squad elevation at some point if, for whatever reason, he doesn't make the team and Samuel gets hurt again, right? You don't lose that skill set if Samuel goes out. Forrest, I know a lot of Washington Commanders fans in my life. They love this dude. They're like, he's a gamer. He's really athletic, like great in the community, but like has amazing on the field traits. So he, I've seen like a lot of cynical Bills Mafia being like, oh, the Mike Edwards signing of this year. But I think he's a great hedge. If Cole Bishop is not ready to go at the start of training camp as your plug-and-play starter at one of the safety positions, Forrest has the same athletic profile. I mean, Cole Bishop is younger, and he's a little bit of an athletic freak, but you're not losing a whole lot in the athletic range area with Forrest. And so I think that's a hedge against Cole Bishop if Bishop is just not ready and they don't want to rush him into play. So I'm okay with it. It's they're hedging their bets. They're filling holes, right?
Well, and I'll say this, I've not watched a full all 22 game of Derek Forrest's, any of his 74 snaps last season. He did not play a lot. I think he was mostly a special teams contributor type.
A very sound tackler, which we definitely need in that secondary.
So I haven't watched much, but my thoughts after just briefly kind of reading about him and looking at some of his stats and accomplishments so far is that he could be, I'm a little bit more excited about this than a lot of these signings because he kind of plays to me like a Jordan Poyer early in his career. Because Jordan Poyer was not a solid starter at Cleveland when the Bills picked him up. He was sort of a chess piece player here and there, had some injury concerns his first couple years in the league, and then was on special teams quite a bit. So him coming over to the Bills, became all-pro Poe, I'm not saying, not putting that on Mr. Derek Forrest, two R's in both Derek and Forrest, by the way, Bills Mafia, if you're trying to get this right
when texting
your friends. Names are important. So Derek Forrest, he has like kind of athletic profile, is a dog in the run fits, And so we'll see. It's the kind of thing where it's like a one-year deal. It's not, I don't even know if the numbers have been released on it. So it's definitely not a blockbuster kind of signing because he's also not that kind of player. And so, we'll see what it comes up with. I'm the same as you on LaVisca Chenault. It's sort of like maybe he ends up, getting bumped onto the practice squad after training camp because he has bounced around the league to six or seven different teams, and he's only 26 years old.
He's like on everybody's, the guy that could pop this year list, right? And he just hasn't yet. But if there's a situation where he can, it is a Buffalo Bills offense where we are targets agnostic, as Mita Kimes likes to say, in this offensive scheme. So if there's a place for someone like that to thrive, it's definitely going to be in Buffalo. Awesome, man. Shoot. I mean, I think we pretty well covered it. A little bit about the draft quick. We're going to be doing draft preview as we get closer to it. I know, JJ, you are probably like a baker's dozen deep into your mock drafts that you've got saved in the shared drive so far.
Well, I have to stop. I have to like slow down mock drafting when I start doing like wild experiments. Most recently, one of my wild experiments was, can I get 10 consecutive picks in the fourth round? Can I trade my way into 10 picks in a row?
You have a problem.
Clean out all of the talent that drops to that level of the draft in one go.
Dude, you have a problem. Need help.
I know.
Free agency's not even done. Mock drafts are never right. Never right.
I do
one mock draft. It's when we do it on the pod.
Yeah.
It's not right.
It's like what I do when I'm like waiting for somebody to email me back, like at work. Like it's like, oh my gosh, I got to just do a quick mock draft. Lunch break, on my phone, waiting for,
off the clock time.
Yep. Kid to wake up from a nap. Yeah. Taking a walk, mock draft.
I'm pretty sure you did two mock drafts on this pod while we were talking.
Just one.
There you go. But yeah, man. So we're gonna get into it. We're actually building the first ever Buffalo Bread draft board, which is gonna be exciting this season, 5 years in. Normally we just take like an aggregate of other draft boards out there and we give our own thoughts to it. But we're watching a ton of film, a lot of combine stuff, and we're gonna put out our own top 100 here this season, which we're very excited about.
Absolutely.
We're gonna continue to oversaturate the mock draft market as well, doing the Friends of the Pod, not Friends of the Bills, all AFC East mock draft as we get closer to draft time. So lots to come. Exciting to be back here. Buffalo Bills 2025 offseason in full swing. For all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.